Welcome back to the Audio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week we meet the last of our new fellows. Chris North, founder of North Media Talent and the Audio Academy Executive Director of the Festival and Foot in the Door. Last September at the festival, Chris was surprised by the honour, and I started by asking him how much of a shock it was when he realised they were talking about him.
I still haven't quite digested that happened, but I'm executive producer of the festival. So I know the running order. Like, it's part of my job. Like, I completely know everything that's happening minute by minute. It was such a shock. And the reason I say that is because this year just gone, I'd said to Dixie that if there's one thing I just don't need to be across this year is the fellowships, because I know when they're going to be. I just don't need to be hassling with who they are, why, who's doing them, you know, who's the host, who's giving them out and stuff. It's a lot of stuff and it moves around a lot. So I'll just put them in, and if somebody can produce that, that'd be great. And then that's one less thing for me to worry about. I like also going in to see who the fellowship is given to and working it out myself.
As they start to talk about the person, yeah.
Yeah. And I just, generally, that's exactly what I said. And unbeknownst to me, that was helpful for Dixie. I was in the gallery because I was coming to see who the first fellowship was. And I represent Stephen Mack, right? I'm Steve's manager. And I'd seen Steve a few days before, and he was like, "Oh, you're in London. Why are you here?" And I said, "Oh, it's the radio festival." He said, "Oh, God, is it that time of year again?" And we were just talking about stuff and his, you know, career and everything else. So when Jack said, "Please welcome Stephen Mack," I was in the gallery and I thought, why is Steve here? Have I forgotten to tell A, as his agent, B, why is he here? And I just couldn't work it out. And for like, so I was quite flustered, a lot of stuff in my head going on. And the next minute he starts talking and I'm like, and the gallery, like Dave Murphy turned to me and he sort of looked at me and I was like, oh my God, he's talking about me. And the reason I'm so in shock, because I literally had no idea. I had no idea he was there. And he'd like, so I'm never trusting him again. I was like, was that in his calendar? Like, have I forgotten to tell him? And because I've sat through my career at festival and other events and seen the fellowships being given out, and I've looked at those incredible people across my career who I've always looked up to and been inspired by, it's never, ever occurred to me that I could be one of them. It genuinely hasn't. The other three totally deserve bring it on. Me, I was a bit like, what? And I just thought, oh no, when he started speaking, I thought, I'm going to have to say something sort of inspirational or cohesive. And I'm looking a bit flustered and I hadn't slept. I wasn't looking my best. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to speak. So I am so honored to become a fellow of the Academy, because there are people in my head that I just would ever put myself in the same bracket. When I used to work at the Radio Academy, when I started my career, Matt Deegan and I used to work at the Academy in the office, and we used to be told at the end of each presentation, like, these are the people who are the new fellows. Can you add it to the end of the headed note paper, you know, there'd be a list of these names. And we used to joke, like, do you think if we put our name in,
like, we'll just
not arrogant,
slip them on there surreptitiously.
Anybody would know. I mean, obviously, we joke this every time. We didn't obviously do that. And then I just go, I genuinely can't believe it. It's such an honor. And I'm flabbergasted. And also, in a weird way, with it being the last Radio Academy and at the new dawn of the Audio Academy, again, it's one of those amazing moments as well, because I sort of feel like I've got a foot in each of those parts of the history. So genuinely, still, like, I still can't. But the reason why we've not done this, by the way, before, is because I still in slight denial that you actually want to talk to me about it. I'm like, oh no, then I'm going to have to do an interview.
I've managed to pin you down eventually, but much like Nick Pitts, I've had this conversation with him when we did his. I still can't get over the fact that we managed to, well, I didn't know on the day, either of you, I didn't know any of the fellows, but how we managed to keep it from you in the same way that we managed to keep it from him, bearing in mind how involved, you know, you run the festival. He was our deputy chair at that point, now chair. To keep it from you guys is an extraordinary piece of espionage, isn't it?
Totally. Dixie, again, don't trust her with a spreadsheet.
Tell me about your earliest memories of radio then, and how you kind of fell in love with sound?
My mum and dad live in North Wales. The BBC was our primary service. There was obviously, you know, Radio City and stuff over the border, MFM, those sorts of stations. But Radio 1, obviously, growing up there was the thing. Get a bit of Atlantic 252. But my dad loves music. My dad loves the radio. He'd always have the Radio 1. And one of my favorite, like, I remember my dad always like having Radio 1 on and the roadshow going to Real. Me coming home from like school one day and having Radio 1 blaring in a sunny day, you know, with Status Quo on and Steve Wright in the afternoon. And I just loved all of that. And I used to listen to The Chart and I used to listen to Bruno and Mark and all these different people. And we did all of the things we did, recorded them and wrote the things down in the top of the pop book and stuff. But I just loved the medium way back to like when I was, you know, I don't know, 9, 10, whatever. But I can very, very clearly remember that. And Radio 1 was like a primary thing for me. Like it was my station. And I remember getting like slightly older in my late teens and saying to mum and dad, like, why do you listen to Radio 1? It's not your radio station. You're supposed to listen to something else, which I have passed on to many people along the way. And now I'm there. I'm supposed to be in a different box. And that's what reminds me of why the power of it is, you know, you're connected to a brand or you're connected to an emotion. So that's my first sort of recollection of being connected to radio and audio. And then I started making radio shows in my bedroom and stuff like that and wanting all the equipment. And I did that all the time. I used to send them to my friends who, like, some friend had moved off. Like, she moved up to the, like, Lake District. I used to make her a show. And then, you know, I'd make shows for different people. And I was obsessed by the end. I remember Christmas Day being my favorite thing because I'd get a new Now That's Michael Music album.
Yeah.
And I'd be able to go upstairs. And when boring adult comedy stuff was on, I could go upstairs and make a new Christmas show with my new music on it and make some jingles and stuff. But do you know what, though? That in itself makes me feel quite excited. You know, some people would say that's sad, isn't it? But I think it's
great. I think it's great as well. I do the same.
So that's my connection. And, you know, going to the Radio 1 Roadshow with my school friends when we were like 16 or something. And, you know, seeing Eternal, which where I fell in love with Louise at that particular junction in my life time. And it, just this thing turning up and being like down the road in Real. But then I was, you know, you have to go and do work experience, don't you, for a week or something. Then saying, what do you want to do for a week? And I said, I want to work at BBC Radio Clwyd, which is my local BBC station. Well, they said, we've no idea how to get hold of anyone there. So I had to go there myself and knock on the door and say, is it possible I could come and do a week of work experience? Fortunately, they were very receptive to that. So I ended up being 15, doing a week of work experience at Radio Clwyd in Mould. And that sort of gear shifted my life, you know. That was like, oh my God, I'm actually in a radio station. Do you know what? They were brilliant at Radio Clwyd. Alan Dolby and Deputy there, Jane, they were fantastic. And they let me, you know, just come and help and do children in need stuff and, you know, be part of that. And that was just down the road. But to everybody else, it's like this building that nobody ever got through those doors to be part of anything. And for me, it was like somewhere I just used to, well, you know, when I was 16, 17, they said, do you want to come and help us with this OB? Or very, very exciting times. But yeah, nobody else was like going to work in a vet or a dentist's for a week. And I was going to radio.
Yeah, it always seemed so glamorous, didn't it, going in a radio station? But those doors seemed quite closed. So to be able to get in was always very, very exciting. How did your actual career then start?
So I did that work experience and then I was very lucky. BBC Manchester, well, CBBC was also based in Manchester then, and they came to our school and they were looking for some TV. They were doing research on this documentary series called Ipso Facto, and they asked a load of people their opinion, young people, and on these different topics. And then at the end, they said, oh, by the way, if anybody would like to put themselves forward to be a presenter, then put your hand up and we'll have a chat with you at the end. Basically, they didn't say this, but I imagine if they thought you were vaguely sensible, they might call you for an audition based on the chats we just had. I did. I put my hand up. Me and my other friend, Dominique, put her hand up and we got called for an audition. And so I ended up going to Manchester and doing all that and being picked to be one of the presenters on this TV program. And that was the start of my career. So I was 15 and a bit, being one of the presenters of this documentary series called Ipso Facto for CBBC. I was on this thing for a year, going around the country doing all of that, which was incredible. And an amazing experience when your face and your name ends up in the Radio Times because you're on a documentary just after news round. It's quite a big deal. Then that came to air and then I went back to school.
How weird was that going back to school?
Horrible. Dominique was lauded as like, oh my God, this is amazing. She doesn't remember it the same way as I do. I was pretty bullied, I think it's fair to say. I'm not trying to take this podcast into a dark place, but it wasn't the best place for a 15-year-old lad who'd finished the program. Our director was Sid Waddell, who's famous.
Oh, darts. Yeah, I know him from the darts. Yeah, darts. Legend. Yeah.
And for some reason, because Dom and I would end up presenting this program about money together, which is all very ironic, we had to do a dance routine. I was dressed in top hat and tails, and she was dressed as a tramp. And we had to, you know, near Moss Side, again, don't know why. And then we did this dance routine to the sunny side of the street. So you can imagine that was bad enough. But then to go back into school and see the sixth formers, I will say that I've used that as in my mind, that experience has helped me in being...
In what way, Chris? How has that helped you?
Because I know how it feels to go back into your normal life. You know, I had to carry on doing my mocks. Just been on, like... Andy Peters had just introduced my name on the telly and then next day. And so I've used that because I know how it feels to be in the midst of something, being a presenter in that excitement that goes with it. And then every single, when are you going back? What's happening next? Are you doing another one? And of course, what happens is they replace you with a group of six new people the next year. And that was a huge learning curve. So I thought I was going to be a famous TV presenter, but I wasn't. And I knew sort of I wasn't the best. That's an amazing experience. Then I thought, right, well, it's obviously radio then, isn't it? But what was I going to do? I was doing my A-levels at this point, go to university, and then I hated university. There was no student radio station there. I hadn't gone to the place I really wanted to go to. My first year, I was going to quit, and I was doing history. I couldn't do my media course. I couldn't get on that because it was oversubscribed. I was about to give up uni, and I called my mum and said to her, I'm not doing this anymore. I just hate my flatmates. I hate being at uni. I don't have any friends. I'm just going to come back to North Wales. And she said, let's stick around until Easter. And I did. And then in that gap, the sabbatical officers elections were happening. And this guy called Rob Martin said, if I get elected, I'm going to start a student radio station. And I phoned mum and said all this. And she said, well, it's brilliant. If he does get elected, great. So he does get elected. And then he says, if you want to come and help start a student radio station, come to this pub and we're going to help set it up. So we did. And I remember mum saying, just go to the meeting. And I was like, I don't want to go. I don't know these people. They're like second years and I don't know them. Just go to the meeting. You've been wanging on about this for ages. And so I went and I sat with 10 or so people in this pub in Leicester. And he said, we've got to think of a name. What's it going to be called? And somebody said, it's got to be something to do with the university. So we wrote De Montfort on a piece of paper and some guy, very sensible person, they wrote a line through the middle and went, Demon? And he went, yeah, that's good. Okay, so it's called Demon. Who wants to be on it? And I was like, oh my God. Like, I've been doing tapes in my room. And because I'd done work experience at local radio, there was me and Emma Marston, who'd done BBC Radio in Devon, Cornwall, and Rob, and we'd all done a bit, like a teeny bit. So we were like the most experienced in the room, which is bonkers. And then he was like, right, well, we'll start in October. So that's it. Right, off we go. No word of a lie. But that anxiety of going into a room when you don't know the people from the other side was with me for a long time in my life. But if I hadn't have gone to that meeting, my entire life would have been different. That gave me my career. And that's why I owe the Student Radio Association, student radio generally, and student media my career, because it literally was that moment, that the gear shift in my entire direction. And that's why I still am an advisor to the SRA, because of that. I got an opportunity to do something that I love doing and found my community of people, found my gang. And this is why I'm able to sit here and talk to you, Georgie, if I'm perfectly honest.
It's all about finding your tribe, isn't it? And you found them. And student radio has played, like you say, a massive part in your career. It's been so important to you as an organisation in finding new talent now. I mean, it's helped you, but tell me about, you know, your work with SRA and Demo Factor and finding that new talent and what the Student Radio Association means.
It doesn't matter how flat your feeling about the trials and tribulations of our sector. Going there makes you feel a million times more recharged about why we do this. And I'm not just saying that for myself. I know that from the other industry speakers who get to be part of SRAcon. I remember going to my very first SRAcon. It was in Liverpool. It was at John Moores University. And it was 30 years ago this week. Now that's random, isn't it?
Bit of kismet there.
Totally. And I went there alone because Rob said to me, oh, this sounds like the sort of thing you would do. go to this conference. Apparently there's another load of people doing this that aren't in Nottingham. So off I went, and it was in John Moores, and that's when Matthew Bannister announced the launch of the Student Radio Awards. So that was one of those moments, like I was connected to a bigger thing all of a sudden. I remember going back to Demon and going, oh my God, this is so exciting. So I also know how it feels when I'm at conference and I see a person who's on their own from a student radio station who've just come there for the first time, or the station's small or it's new, whatever. I say this to exec, make sure you keep an eye out for those people on their own, because, you know, you need to be part of this. It has meant a lot to me. I was an SRA officer and I've been all those different things. It's been something to take a lot of pride from and see other people and made a load of friends from that along the way, back from when I was on SRA to through to now, you know. Plus, it's a great place for us all to share ideas and stuff. But when you say about what's it done for me in terms of talent, it's not just the on-air talent either. It's the producers and the tech people and the marketing people and the social media people who are doing this every day in their student radio station for nothing. All the jobs that we all moan about, they're doing it for nothing and they're doing it brilliantly. And they're inspiring us to do better. When we found Greg James being a student, winning a Best Male Presenter Award at Student Radio Awards, and able to be in the space where I was able to be his first agent, to navigate the language and the dialogue and the, you know, the riddle that is getting into the sector with him, was a huge honor. I remember meeting Jordan North at a student radio conference. He'd won a prize and I'd be just having a chat, you know, and then later on in life, I was able to be his agent and get into Radio One. Jack Saunders. I remember being introduced to Jack Saunders by Pete Allison off of Newsbeat. And Pete saying to me, this is the new station manager of Fly in Nottingham Trent. I just wanted to introduce you to him so that you can meet him. And I'm like, oh, brilliant. Not every person we meet is going to be one of those people. But God, a lot of them will become part of the backbone of what we all do. And it's not just about being on air, is it? It's about all aspects of our sector in the audio world. When I do festival, you know, when I need people to help be part of production, I draw upon those people who've done these events at a great scale, you know. There's like over 200 and something people coming to Salford to their conference for 3 days. And a lot of them have got different skill sets and doing different things. It's about us giving them time to explain to us what they would really like to do, as opposed to us sticking them in a box. And I think it's just an organic relationship between the Audio Academy, the Student Radio Association, and the industry. It's sort of all symbiotic. Demo Factor, I can't still believe Demo Factor is happening. It was 2008. We're in Bath. They say to me, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I don't know. Greg James and I can have a chat about the fact he's just joined Radio One. And after that, let's do some demo clinic, which GWR, you know, Nick Pigger, Steve Orchard, Dirk Anthony, they used to, Dick Stone, they used to do this thing when I was a student. So I was like, why don't we just do something and listen to demos and do it in front of everybody? A bit pre-Pop Idol. And then we did. We got tapes. They all sat there. We put them in a tape recorder. There was me, Sam Gregory, Vicky Blight, Neil Sloan, and Mike Cass couldn't come. So he sent this person called Rob Watson. We're all sitting on these Westlife stools in the student union listening to some tapes. And then literally I would go, next one is blah, and I'd play it. And then we would stop it. Right, thoughts? And then everybody would say, and they'd be like, this tape doesn't work, there's nothing on this tape. Oh, okay. And then this guy called Ben Burrell was the best one of the night. We decided that's who the best one was. So he got the accolade of being Demo Idol, as it was then called for that 1 year. He was the winner. And Ben Burrell is Ben Burrell off of Absolute Radio Net. There are countless people who've come from that Demo Factor thing, but there's also countless people who have been brilliant producers from the back of that. And there's also people who I like bumped into on the tube and said, and they're like, oh, hi, you're Chris, aren't you? Yeah, yeah, yeah. They say, oh, I used to do student radio. I did Demo Factor. And I'm like, oh, brilliant. And what are you doing now? And like, and I'm a teacher. Oh, right, brilliant. And how's that going? Well, after your feedback, I decided maybe I should just be a teacher, which is not how this is supposed to work.
No.
But I'm wondering if the education system is benefiting somewhere along the line. So like 16 years on, there's going to be a cycle of people who go, oh, there's this thing called Demo Factor Bike, and I'm well gone, and I'm retired. I love it, though, and it's a brilliant, brilliant experience.
What's the one piece of advice that you would give to someone listening who's starting out right now and who wants to go into audio?
Get out of your comfort zone and don't just stay at home making a podcast or a radio show in your bedroom. Go to the outside world. Get yourself, I know it's expensive, but get yourself on a train and go to Foot in the Door if there's one near you. The Audio Academy Foot in the Doors. I'm very, very proud of. Be in the space. You might be sitting at home thinking, oh God, I'm never going to get through that door. I'm never going to get in. But if you don't leave your home and just go and meet people, we are a nice bunch of people in the radio sector. I get told this all the time when we do Foot in the Door. Oh my God, you're so nice. And like, you just want to help. Yes, that's all this is about, right? We just want you to have the same fun that we are having. And none of us can quite believe we're still getting away with being in the radio
it's
world.
True.
If we've got this, come along for the ride. You know? And it's brilliant. Like the speed networking that we do at Foot in the Door, you know, there are moments when these people who are like grassroots level, entry level people, not just from student radio, from community radio, or from just a podcast down the road, and they're in this space and they could be sitting with loads of different people. They haven't got the faintest idea who half of them are. Right. And that's very humbling for us. But at the same time, an opportunity might be like, oh, so they work in live events. Oh my God, I didn't know I could do that. That's what I love doing. Or they do session recordings. And this is a technical person. It's not just about being a presenter. And I think about being in our sector, it's about doing stuff, making stuff. Yes, granted, but being active. And I do talks at universities and stuff a lot, not for the SRA, just because people ask me to. And I say to them, you know, you've just got to just think, don't just pick a lane and run with it. Because I think we were in the place where you can't be a producer and a presenter, and you can't be a producer and a tech person, or you can't, you know, that's a load of rubbish. This industry has changed so dramatically that the fact you want to be in it alone is testament to itself. We will help people get into our businesses if we can, if there's an opportunity to see some great talent about a person who's engaged, who understands our medium. And that's about listening to all the content you want to listen to, consume stuff. And then over a period of time, you will navigate through whether you're a good person in production or a good person in tech or a good person in sound design or a good person in presenting or whatever it may be. And thankfully, because of community radio, there is another pool of incredible resource for you to be able to do that, as well as if you've just graduated. And if you haven't gone to university, that doesn't matter either. Somebody like Connor Knight is a brilliant example of that. Dan Noble, who I represent, same principle applies, didn't go to uni. So it's not just, oh, we have to do student radio to get in. That's not true either. Engage with things like the Audio Academy and come to our events and be part of festival. Maybe get the bursary, maybe ask to volunteer. It's about being in the space with like-minded people.
A big thank you to Chris North for being our guest. Don't forget, festival tickets on sale now for the 1st of October at the Royal College of Physicians. And there is an early bird discount for freelancers, which runs until the end of June. Check out the details on our website, audioacademy.org.uk/festival. Tickets are now also on sale for our Birmingham and London socials on the 1st of July and the 16th of July. Go to audioacademy.org.uk/events for details and to book your place. Next week, do not miss a proper legend in the radio and audio industry when I chat with Valerie Geller, author of Creating Powerful Radio and now her book Beyond Powerful Radio. I'll see you next week.